Good evening. We'll call the meeting to order. Welcome to the August 15th, 2017 meeting of the Planning Commission. And we'll start off with a special introduction. Jim?
No. Thank you. Jim Bolger, Department of Community Development. I wanted to take this opportunity at the beginning of the meeting to introduce you to, I believe, our newest department staff member. Joining us now as the new clerk for the Planning Commission and for the hearing examiner is Amanda Walston. First week on the job, so she's in capable hands with Stanton getting her all trained up. Amanda is great because she's familiar with this. Like many of us, she has actually returned to the employment of Kitsap County. Amanda was previously here in 2008, and so the two of us kind of were two ships passing here in the department. But she served in the same function, so she's familiar with the responsibilities and the activities and the procedures of the Planning Commission, and so we're really thrilled that she decided she wanted to come back to the county and had this opportunity for her in a job that she knew already. So please take a minute when you get a chance during breaks or whenever to introduce yourself and turn it back over to the chair.
Okay. Well, welcome. Thank you. And you're up on your Robert's Rules of Order, is that correct? Okay, well, we're going to need you periodically. All right. So starting way down on our left, we do have a new planning commissioner.
Yeah, brand new. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So long lost Darren Murphy, North Kitsap.
Spencer Stegman, North Kitsap.
Rick Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, Central.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Brianna Tarth, House Stark.
Ooh.
Kara Ann Gonzalez Harless, South Kitsap.
Gina Buskirk, Central Kitsap.
Robert Baglio, South Kitsap. Is there a motion for the adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
Second? Any discussion?
Moved. Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay. All those in favor? Okay. Now we do have approval of the minutes. I know it's been a while. I assume you've all spent some time and took a look at those. Is there a motion for the adoption of the minutes? Is there a motion?
I'll move to adopt the minutes of June 6.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Those abstaining? Okay. Get that.
And I would make note that I think it says I was attending and absent, so.
Good job.
That's difficult.
If it's worth $50, I'll say I was here, whatever, you know.
That's one way of saying you weren't paying attention.
Oh, right, yeah.
Anyway, say. Well, Jim, do you want to go ahead? It looks like we have a work study. Do you want to give us a little intro on that, or is Mr. May going to lead in?
Planning Commissioners, I'd like to introduce Dr. Chris May, who's the manager of the Stormwater Program with the Department of Public Works, to do tonight's work.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Chris May, I don't know if I met many of you before, but some of you I know. So, I'm here to talk about, give you a little briefing and do Q&A on some code change to the Chapter 12.4, which is the Stormwater Program rate structure, not talking about rates, but the rate structure, how we charge people for stormwater. And basically, I'll give you a rundown on what the changes were. You probably, I hope you read them. Anybody got a copy? Anybody need a copy? I got extra copies. Okay, good. So I think we gave you a strikeout version and a clean version and so forth. So the first thing was Lisa Nickel, our prosecuting attorney, our legal eagle, went through and kind of cleaned up the language to make the code more concise and clear. We also kind of tried to simplify the rate structure, if you will. You'll notice that there was a table in there before that had all these different land use categories in it. But if you read through the table, you would have seen that we treated every one of them the same. And so it was like a table of several things treated all the same. So basically what we have for rates, how we do rates, is we look at impervious surface area. And one of the things that you'll see changed in there is in the old days, we used to allow for either measurement of the impervious or estimate of it. because if you remember back way before we had all these fancy tools like GIS and everything like that, sometimes the guys would have to go out and take a wheel and run it around the parking lot or whatever and estimate. Nowadays, we can do it pretty much by either as-builts, which are pretty accurate, or if we need to, we'll use GIS. So we've taken out the thing that says estimate because we don't feel that we really need to estimate anymore. We can just measure it. I mean, in the old days, they did have to estimate, but nowadays, we don't think we have to. So basically, you look at how much impervious they have. We have an equivalent service unit, which we define as a single-family residential unit, and that's defined as 4,200 square feet as a kind of an average or median residential unit of impervious. Okay? The lot could be 2 acres, it could be a half acre, whatever, but 4,200 square feet came from a report that was done for us a while back that looked at all the lots in Kitsap and basically said 4,200 is pretty much average. We looked around at other jurisdictions. It runs the gamut from anywhere from about 5,000 some to down to 3,200. You know, mostly cities, you see smaller numbers, and other areas have larger numbers. So we're going to stick with the 4,200 because that's what we have the data for. Everybody's been being charged by on that basis for the last several years or 10 years. So that's the way we want to keep it if we could. You use that 4,200 square feet to divide into the impervious of whatever other land use it is. We're not going to list them all out, but if you're not a single-family residence, you know, you don't get charged a flat fee. You get charged based on your impervious. Divide the 4,200 square feet into your impervious area. Figure out how many ESUs that is, either round up or round down. Multiply it by the rate for that particular year, and you get the charge. And that's how we do commercial. That's how we do everybody else, including our own road department. They get charged exactly the same way. The state law that says you have to do it that way. A couple jurisdictions, won't make any mention any names, have tried over the years to finagle that to get the road department to pay less. They've gotten into trouble on that, so we're going to stay out of trouble on that. Now, WSDOT did have the legislature pass a special law that exempted WSDOT from stormwater fees, or at least didn't exempt them, but it made them subject to a, I think it's about a one-third rule. So in other words, they pay a certain amount based on the impervious that they have through running through a county, but it's not what they normally would pay if they were a county road. But that's because they had a law passed by the legislature. So anyhow, there's that. So the table goes away. The estimated goes away, and everything else kind of just gets cleaned up in there. And that's the main bulk of the changes. Now, the second part of the changes was the commissioners were very keen. I talked to them here, have been talking to them recently about rates and stormwater. They're very keen on maintaining the incentives and, in fact, making sure that people know they have those incentives. We have these incentives in there, but not a lot of people use them, so we're going to try to start pushing that out a little bit more to the public. One of the problems with the incentives that were in there, they were a bit ambiguous legal thought in that people could read them and think that new development would be eligible for those. And in fact, you don't want that to happen because new development under the new rules, under the new LID rules, they have to do all those things like infiltrate, and you guys have been through that talk before. So if in fact we gave them an incentive for doing what they had to do already, that's not correct. But anybody else out there wants to retrofit, we should, you know, obviously give them some incentive. And we settled on this 50% of your rate, of your charge, your fee charge. We looked around on that again. Other jurisdictions do this. The highest we could find was 35%. Talked to the commissioners. They want to stick with the 50 because they feel it maybe gives a little bit more incentive for people to actually do something. So you can do one of three things. You can infiltrate all your water. You can use all your water. You can set up a system of cisterns and pumps and so forth and use it to irrigate or flush toilets or whatever you want to use. And then the other thing is if you're sitting next to, say, Dye's Inlet or something like that, you have a direct discharge situation, you're not draining to a stream, so don't care about flows. If you treat to the current water quality standards, you also get that discount. So three ways to get the discount. And we hope that we can kind of get that word out and get more people, you know, doing things to get that discount. I think there probably are people out there that are eligible for it that don't either know about it or don't realize it. The way we want to do it is we want to have them get us somebody and tell us that they're doing this. Some engineer, doesn't have to be a fancy report, it can be an email from an engineer that says, hey, I've been out there, looked at the site, here's the plans, I think these guys meet it, we'll send our inspectors out. If they agree, we'll give them the discount. Every year we'll swing by to make sure that they're maintaining the system, because obviously, you know, you could just do it once and walk away, but our inspectors are out at all commercial sites anyway, so they'll be able to keep track of that.
Chris, you know, at the fair, of course, the Conservation District is pushing rain gardens.
Yes.
And so
good segue here.
Is a rain garden fit within one of these categories?
So it's a good segue, because one of the things we talked about is, should we give homeowners the 50% discount? And what we feel is it's better to have the rain garden fee cost share be for the single family residential rather than the just half their fee, because the fee is pretty low for residential. It's $91 right now. So, you know, $91, you say, I'm going to put a rain garden in, and now I'm going to pay $45, but it cost me $3,000 to put the rain garden in. Not as much of incentive. Obviously, if you're a commercial and you're paying $10,000 and you're going to get $5,000 off, that's a good deal.
Right.
So the rain garden program allows the single family residential people to get up to $1,000 cost share or incentive payback for putting in a rain garden or something like that. If you think about that, that's about 10 years worth of your fees, you know, away. So we thought that was a better way to do the single family. Thank you. That was a good, I'm glad I planted that question with you. The other thing that Lisa recommended, our legal person recommended, is removing the actual rates from the code, because that is cumbersome. You got rates in the code, all the other utilities, all the other people basically do it by resolution. So that's the way we'll do it, is by resolution. And then finally, she went through and we went through and looked at it and made sure that this the new code aligns with the new permit. And we think it does. Obviously, the biggest oddity in there was the whole, is the incentive for retrofit or is it for everybody? So it's for retrofit. Now, somebody might have a question like, say I build a new development tomorrow. Jim's here. And in 2 years, I come to you and say, hey, I've added on a few things. I'd like to get the discount. I think we'll treat that on a case-by-case basis. I mean, if somebody's doing something, they should probably get credit for doing it.
So Chris, how about like Costco when they redid their deal?
Yeah, that's a good example. If they go above and beyond the call of duty and they treat their stormwater and they can prove that they meet the discount, they should get the discount.
So and I, you know, they moved that gas station over the other side. Mm-hmm. Did they get the discount for the?
No, because they didn't treat the entirety of their site. You know, so we're hoping for a person like that who pays a fairly substantial would look at 50% and say, you know, that's a pretty good number. I should do maybe a few other things to get that discount. That's like I said, I don't think people really realize how much you can save. So, again, that's an outreach issue, and we'll get to that as we go. So that's all I have. Any questions? Anything I missed in there? Anybody find any? Lisa's pretty good, so I don't know. She might have missed something in there. Actually, I'm disappointed that Tom's not here tonight, Mr. Evans, because he actually was one of the ones that wanted that one change with the, if you remember, he was wanted that change with mm-hmm. the incentives to clarify their retrofit. So
that is too bad.
It's all right. He'll be here next time, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
All right. Any questions?
Yes. Any questions? So what's the timing on this?
I'll be back for a decision next time, I guess.
Yeah, we'll have to do a hearing and okay.
Yay, hearings.
Sir.
Have you gotten any feedback from the development community?
No, you know, because really this is for, you know, existing rates. So they're locked in by the permit and the manual and the other code that talks about new development. That's why I said the overlap here is, when does somebody now become older and we retrofit them? And that's something we'll just have to play by ear. But no, I haven't heard anything negative. But I'm sure simplifying of rates would be to everybody's benefit. Most jurisdictions, when you look at their rate structure like ours, it's very similar. They don't have a whole lot there. I mean, the most, if you look through the whole thing, the most of those pages is about appeals and what you do if you have a problem and how you deal with it, and a lot of legalese in there. So, but the rate stuff is pretty much two quick paragraphs. So.
Just a question regarding parcels owned by public school districts. Do they all take advantage of this?
Yep.
Have they tried? Yes.
Yep. They have to prove that they do actually do education that has a benefit with related to water conservation, stormwater, stuff like that. And all of them have different curriculums. And our outreach person, Pat Kirschbaum, who works with the schools, deals with that. And she has a simple form that she has them fill out, and then they hand it into the auditor's office, and they get their thing. Yeah, I don't know the number, but it's about a couple $100,000 a year that gets taken off of our rates for schools.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Can private businesses do that? We have classes.
If you had classes,
educate our employees.
No, I don't think the state law applies to them.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Your employees don't go home and bother the hell out of their parents about why they're wasting.
They might.
That's the key, right?
They still live at home.
Makes sense if you did continuing education for professionals and you did it on your property.
Okay.
All right. You. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I'll see you next time.
Okay. So the next one, it does say it's going to be brief.
Briefing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the board asks that the department come before the Planning Commission and provide you with a brief on how they're proceeding to address one of the comprehensive plan, the 2016 comprehensive plan appeals that was remanded by the Central Puget Sound Growth Management Hearings Board back to the county to take action by September 5th. And the issue that the board is looking at right now is that one of the issues in this appeal that we're dealing with, that the board's dealing with right now, had to do with whether the county had conducted an adequate land capacity analysis for the final ordinance, so for the final plan. And it included some properties in the El Dorado Hills area. About 200 acres were added in to the final plan. And the hearings board determined that the county should have run another land capacity analysis, including all the properties in that final UGA. And so we really needed to kind of show our work with that. So what the board is considering right now is that on September 12th of 2016, there was a supplemental environmental impact statement that came out. And the board's resolution is actually revising that, or basically withdrawing that supplemental environmental impact statement and revising it and adopting a new supplemental environmental impact statement that basically shows the math associated with that additional 200 acres. Much of that was actually built out property. And so the amount of additional capacity that this added was relatively small and stayed within the acceptable margins around the anticipated population targets. So the board's resolution will actually have them adopt this new supplemental, and it will also have them asserting a finding that this new UGA boundary from the 2016 comprehensive plan was appropriately sized to accommodate the anticipated target population for the Silverdale UGA. This has all been posted online for people to review. The board had a hearing on this last night. They've kept the record open so that if people have additional comments, they can submit that through August 25th, and they'll have a decision-only hearing, or close the hearing on the 28th for decision-only for adopting this, and then we have to respond back to the hearings board with a statement of action that the board's taken. So that was just the quick briefing. The board was recommending we brief you on this appeals and actions associated with repeals with appeals are exempt from having to go back through the Planning Commission to have you all come up with a recommendation. So that's basically the main briefing that I wanted to share. Then the other thing that's not on your agenda, but I did want to just mention it, most of you are probably aware of this, is that the Board of County Commissioners adopted the Critical Area Ordinance on July 3rd. Substantively, they didn't make, I don't think, any, I can't off the top of my head recall, because As you know, those deliberations went on for several days for you all, but they also took several days for the board. A lot of clarifying language, not any real major overturns from what the Planning Commission recommendation was. The one that really kind of jumps out at me is that they did stipulate for danger trees, for example, that there be permanent structures. I think this group had recommended that we just say that if a structure is in danger, then a danger tree identification was appropriate. But they went with permanent to avoid somebody putting a temporary structure and walking it around their property and effectively logging by moving a temporary structure around the property. So they did make the effective date for that October 2nd, I believe, or the October 1st. I think it was a 90-day period. And so the appeals clock is running on that still. I think we have about another month, another 30 days before that closes. So far, no appeals that we've heard of. So, and that is all I have.
So what do we have coming up other than stormwater program rate coming back to us?
That's all. We will probably want to do a briefing on some of the code development work we've been working on in terms of the plan to move forward. One of the big considerations right now that the department's making, and we had conversations with the board on this yesterday, as a matter of fact, was we've got these over 200 code revisions that have been identified, and we're because the division, the long-range division, which does a lot of the code amendments, has gone through a lot of turnover and staffing changes, really a lot of the people power down there have been focused on these big projects, CAO, comp plan, Title 17 revisions. And so one of the things we're looking at is this long list of just maintenance. It's like a car that hasn't been maintained for the last 5 years. We haven't been doing the regular oil changes or the timing belts or those kinds of things. And so we're at a point where we're really thinking about, well, maybe now is the time to really reexamine whether the code as it's currently formatted is the appropriate structure to go with. Many jurisdictions have gone with a unified development code. There's form-based zoning that might be appropriate for certain areas. Maybe it's just simply formatting better and making it more user-friendly and taking advantage of technology to make it, you know, more interconnected. So what we're really proposing and proposed to the board to do was before we kind of launch and just kind of start plugging after these 205 plus revisions that we need to do is we go in and we look and say maybe now is the time to kind of reformat. City of Port Orchard just went through a process of developing, changing their code to a unified development code. We'll be interested in talking to them. We meet regularly with other similar counties like Snohomish County and Pierce County and Clark County. Snohomish and Clark and Jefferson County all have a unified development code. Some are more sophisticated than others. So we really took to the board kind of the plan to plan. During that time, we won't stop doing code revisions. We'll really kind of focus on those that are slowing down permit review just because of ambiguity or inconsistency in the code. So we'll continue to work forward because an overhaul of the code would be a several-year project, ultimately. The other thing that we're looking at doing is starting to implement more of a regular batch code revision process. This is something that both Snohomish and Clark counties go through, where in the fall and the spring, they put together a list of minor and administrative revisions that they want to do. They sit in front of their respective county councils. And they basically say, you know, here's 45 revisions. We want to make them in one fell swoop. Are there any in here that are going to bog the rest of them down? If there are, you pull them out, you table them for another more deliberate process. But they go through and they'll do dozens of code revisions every 6 months just to make sure that their code's kept healthy and active. And so now that we have kind of a full long-range planning staff, we're looking at moving in that direction as well. So we're hoping that we'll keep kind of a regular flow of code revisions coming through over the next 18 months, which is really kind of a window we have where we don't have any big mandated planning projects like a CAO or a comp plan update ahead of you. So that's what you can look forward to.
So the 200 plus,
mm-hmm.
is that something that's put together in one document or a list? Is that something that is
Well, that was part of the problem is just compiling that list because it's a dynamic thing. And the way we didn't have a systematic way of compiling that list or managing it. And in fact, we're proposing to the commissioners in this next 2018 budget that we bring in a person who kind of becomes the code administrator for the county, who every time somebody identifies one of these needs, that we actually have a systematic way of recording it. Because these things would be, you know, somebody would have a yellow sticky on their monitor saying, fix landscaping, Title 17, you know, and there really wasn't a lot of information on do what, how do we do it. And so we've spent a lot of time just kind of forensically rebuilding what all these revisions should be. And then staff has gone through and kind of tried to bucket them in, you know, what are the major ones, what are the minor ones, what are just the administrative housekeeping ones we have to do. One good example is performance-based development. We're going to be moving to an electronic plan review system in the department. So everything's going to come in electronically. Well, code right now says you have to bring in, you know, 14 different sets of plans, hard copy plans. So, you know, those will be some of the kind of the housekeeping things that we'll try and take care of as we go along. Once we get this list compiled, we're going to start walking that around. And then probably as a part of this bigger code assessment that we want to do, we'll be going out and we'll be getting more input from groups like, you know, KBA, Kitsap Building Association. We'll be working with our departmental advisory group to identify things and trying to identify other areas that are in addition to what we've been able to identify in-house.
Questions?
Jim, was that remand from the hearings board on the comp plan the only substantive appeal issue?
You'll have to forgive me because I kind of came on board in December, and so a lot of these were in play, and it's hard for me to keep track of some of them. I think there were six appeals that were for the comp plan that went to the hearings board, and most of them the county prevailed on. A number of the ones that the county prevailed on with the hearings board have been elevated to superior court, so they're still in play. And when they get to superior court, that's really when the prosecutor's office takes over. So a number of them are also in settlement discussions. The city of Port Orchard, we've been talking settlement. A lot of those are kind of capital-related transportation issues. That's been going on for the last 6 months, but most of the hearings board issues have pretty much been settled, and they've either been moved to another venue or we're still talking settlement.
All right. So then the 29th, we'll probably do the, obviously, that going to be the hearing for the item we just heard?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you all.
Anything for the good of the order? Yes, Jim?
I'm going to be in Canada on our next meeting day, so I won't be able to attend.
That is for the good of the order, isn't it?
It is.
Sorry, I've been gone a long time. I had to.
Sorry, I had to say something.
Exploring, applying for citizenship.
Have you ever been in a parliamentary system before?
Okay, meeting adjourned. Have a good evening.